Matthew is going to use that idea that the sick need a doctor to move into the section where Jesus heals the sick. He has already healed a lame man in this, but that was a story about forgiveness of sin. It's interesting, and it's really important to see the big ideas here. Matthew does things a little bit differently. He lumps together these stories of how Jesus heals people physically. And he puts the bulk of his healing stories together in this lump. And he does that. If you didn't notice that, when the Sermon on the Mount was Jesus teaching in a lump. And he does this throughout the whole course of the book of Matthew. All of the main parables about the kingdom will be in one chapter, all lumped together. When you study Mark or Luke, you see everything interspersed, moving from idea to idea with a different order in mind. Here, Matthew does it differently because he wants you to take all of what he's going to teach you about Jesus and see it as one thought building into two other thoughts. So he says the physician heals the sick. Then he moves on to discuss these accounts of healing. The other thing that you have to see here is that these are going to be abbreviated stories. Your brain, as we go through these in Matthew, your brain is going to say, there's more to this story. I heard this story before, and there's more to it. This story's longer than what we're getting here this morning. Well, Matthew has a reason for that. Remember, Matthew isn't trying to tell you everything he knows about Jesus. He's trying to tell you what's important to know about Jesus. And so he's focusing in his mind here this authority that Jesus has to heal, to bring his kingdom. And then in the next two chapters, he will deliver those ideas. But you know what? This is only the setup for what's happening in the next few chapters. So, as I've said before, you can't just take a little section and get everything out of it that you need. You need these big sections. Matthew deals with chapters at a time to build his whole ideas. And if you just get focused on the micro parts of a little story, you will miss the big things. I don't want you to miss the big things. The little aspects are important, but I'm not going to focus on all that this morning. I don't want you to lose what Matthew is saying, and I know it's going to be a long week, and you will do your best to lose that, but I will try to keep it on target for Matthew's sake here. Look for the authority, but specifically you're looking for one thing. This is the one thing Matthew wants you to get in your head, even though he's not going to quite say it yet. He's going to wait two more chapters before he says it. All right? That's how long he's building. He's building this long thing. Two more chapters before he gets to his point. And his point will be this, and I tell you now so that it sticks in your head. Jesus comes to fulfill the prophecies of Isaiah. Okay? The blind will see, the deaf shall hear. So turn with me to Matthew chapter 9, and I want to look at this story interspersed. There's two stories that are blended together, and what this shows you, because of these two stories, that we have a woman being healed and a girl being healed, and then they're tied together with an introduction. Jesus is called to heal the woman, then to heal the girl, then he heals the woman, then he goes on to heal the girl. It's a very unique story. It's a very unique thing. That's why you know that when you see it in Mark and Luke, it's the same story. It's not two different stories that are similar. It's the same story. Very important. And yet you can see how Matthew condenses everything down, which is what I want you to see. Let me read verses 20 and 22 to you. And behold, a woman who had suffered from a discharge of blood for 12 years came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his garment. For she said to herself, if I only touch his garment, I will be made well. Jesus turned and seeing her, he said, take heart, daughter, your faith has made you well. And instantly the woman was made well. It's interesting. This woman, she has this chronic problem of bleeding, probably from the womb. She's perpetually unclean. She's unclean all the time. All the time, unclean. She shouldn't even be in the crowd of people. Because everybody she's touching, she's making unclean and they don't know it. She's, you know, just going around violating the law for all these people. She certainly shouldn't be touching Jesus. And maybe it's because of that unclean situation she has. She doesn't even want Jesus to know what's going on. She chooses only to touch the edge of his garment. She won't even touch him directly. She doesn't want to touch his skin. Think about it. If he was like maybe some of the other religious leaders, can you imagine a Pharisee standing there and you were unclean and you came up and you went, "You're unclean now." How do you think they'd react? If you walked up to him, you touched him, tag, you're unclean. What would you think the average Pharisee's reaction, just based on what we read in the Bible, how do you think they'd react to that? They'd be, "Oh, that's great. I've been looking for an unclean person all day to touch me." They would be very upset. I imagine it would spoil their whole day, especially if you did it, say, the night before Passover. There'd be these ways in which you could really frustrate people. And I wonder if she had experienced that reaction from people before. That she's sensitive to it. That she's afraid of Jesus. She knows Jesus can actually heal her, or believes it. She really believes it. But she's afraid to directly deal with Jesus. Because maybe he won't touch her. She's, you know, we had this idea of Jesus can say the word and heal. Jesus can heal at the distance. She has this belief that there must be a touch that has to happen. And so maybe she's afraid Jesus, given his own volition, will not touch her and will not heal her. Of course, we read from Mark and Luke, she had seen many doctors. No one's been able to help her. And yet when she touches Jesus, she could immediately feel that she's healed. At least that's what the other accounts say. Jesus feels this power go out and he turns and says, "Who touched my garments?" I imagine at that point the woman's fearful. Matthew leaves all those extra details out and he just condenses it down, and Jesus said, "Who touched me? Oh, be healed." Very, very simple way to do it. Why is Matthew's account so short? Well, he only includes details that matter to his point, just the things that really get the point across. He's not attempting to include everything that Jesus says and does here. See, the problem is not with Matthew. The problem's with you. The way you've been trained to think. You think everything has to be included there for it to be right. You believe, you're the kind of people that if we took Matthew, Mark, and Luke down, your initial impression is to go through them all, put it in chronological order, and make sure every detail would be complete in all of them. Wouldn't you? You'd want them all to be inclusive so you could begin at the beginning and not miss a single detail of anything Jesus said or did, and then get to the end and you'd have known everything. It's all in order. That if you were making a movie of Jesus, you wouldn't just say, "Well, I'm only going to use the book of Mark." You'd say, "But there's so much more in Matthew and Luke, we've got to put some of that in there too." Right? That it would frustrate you to only see the gospel presented from only one of the gospel writers' positions when you know there's more information that you just love to have included. And you'd say, "Jesus said more than that on that occasion." Matthew didn't care. The problem's with the way you think and the way you approach it. What's remarkable about this story is that Jesus healed this woman passively rather than actively. You know, it's her faith. She just comes up to Jesus and seeks him out. He feels the power go out from him. Isn't that incredible? Well, there's nothing else like this where somebody just comes up and kind of steals a little healing from Jesus. Every other time, it's him actively doing the healing. For her, this woman, it's passive. She reached out by faith and took hold of the power because she recognized that Jesus was the Son of God. She recognized that. Now, I'm going to jump back a couple of verses. This is where this story starts. While he was saying these things, verse 18, "Behold, a ruler came in and knelt before him, saying, 'My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live.' And Jesus rose and followed him with his disciples." Then the woman is healed on this trip. Then we get to verse 23. "And when Jesus came to the ruler's house and saw the flute players and the crowds making a commotion, he said, 'Go away, for the girl is not dead, but sleeping.' And they laughed at him. But when the crowd had been put outside, he went in and took her by the hand, and the girl arose. And the report of this went through all that district." And your mind saying, "There's more to that story. I know there is. I've heard that story before." And again, Matthew leaves out so many details. Now, when this man comes before Jesus, he kneels before him and he asks this thing of Jesus. Now, his faith is not as great as the centurion. Remember the centurion? The centurion just said, "You don't need to come to my house. Just say the word and it will be done." But this man goes with the faith that he has. This man says, "Come to my house." Jesus goes along with it. Now, in Mark and Luke, we get a little bit more information on the story. The girl isn't dead when the father comes. You see, this is a big difference here. In Mark and Luke, Jesus is out there, and the man comes, and he says, "My daughter is sick. Will you come heal her?" And Jesus said, "Sure." Along the way, they're interrupted by healing this woman. They continue along, and then the man's servants come and say to their master, "Don't bother Jesus anymore. Your daughter has died." In Matthew's story, it says this: a ruler came in and knelt before Jesus, saying, "My daughter has just died, but come and lay your hand on her and she will live." Okay, this is the same story, it's just not told in the same way. Now, what we like to do is say, there's got to be a reasonable explanation for all this, right? So we can interleave the two stories. Some people like to do this. The man comes, "My daughter is sick," and Jesus says, "I'll go with you." The servants come and say, "Leave him alone, your daughter's died." The man hits his knees, "My daughter's just died, will you come anyway?" All right? You want to do that, that's fine. It's probably not the way to read it. You could do that. That's probably not the way to read it. The way to read it is, Matthew took this big story and said, the point is the girl was dead. And the man still wanted Jesus to come. Here's the point. For Matthew, there's nothing wrong to tell the story in that way. It doesn't make the story not true. It doesn't change the story for him. He wasn't raised like you to think exactly like you. And so to express the story in this condensed account is just fine. Now, you can take any interpretation you want. You can blend them together, do whatever you want. You're fine. I'm just letting you know that there's more than one way to see things here. Matthew's account condenses the story in whatever way you want to get to the final point. The final point being, he still believed Jesus could help a girl who was beyond help. He still believed. We suffer a contradiction in the accounts because we have a view that requires everything to be exactly one way. But the thing that gets you over that hump is understanding is none of this was written in Greek anyway. It's already been translated for you. And it comes to you from Matthew to communicate that Jesus does something no one else did. You see, there were other faith healers that traveled around Palestine. You know, we've never been without faith healers. We still got them today. And they run around and maybe tap people on the forehead or shake their coat out at them or something. There's faith healers that travel around in all kinds of cultures and religions. But when Jesus comes to raise a girl from the dead, he's doing something faith healers didn't usually attempt to do because it's not very successful. And they knew it. The crowd, in fact, laughs at Jesus, partially because of the diagnosis here. Jesus says, "She's not dead, she's only asleep." You know what? If I had something I knew to be dead, and you came along and said, "It's not dead, just sleeping," and you were supposed to be this really great healer, I'd laugh at you too. Because you haven't even got the diagnosis right. All right? If you're thinking you're just going to wake this person up, you got another thing coming. They also may have laughed at Jesus because he was late and he still thought he could do it. I mean, how full of himself is this guy, right? He's coming along to heal this girl, and he gets there just a little bit late. She's dead now. And instead of saying, "Sorry, folks, I can't help you now," he still thinks he's going to raise her from the dead. That takes guts. They probably thought he was so arrogant. But Jesus doesn't believe that death is final, does he? If he does, his mission is going to be a failure. Jesus, above all else, believes in a God who raises the dead. And so do we. He didn't believe that death was final and that there was no afterlife. This girl was dead, but to him that meant she was only sleeping. What's remarkable about this story is that Jesus raises a girl from the dead. That's remarkable. Along that line, Matthew mentions that there's flute players here. Flute players would come to happy things and sad things. So they would be at a wedding or a festival, and they would also be at a funeral, at a death. And here they were coming to the funeral, and what Jesus does is makes them play a different tune. They came to play one song. They stayed, but they played a different song because the sadness of death was taken away and replaced by joy. There are a few others in the history of Israel who raised the dead. It was very rare. But there was never any doubt that the one through whom the miracle occurred was only a man, was only a prophet of God. No one ever claimed to take the credit for raising the dead until Jesus came along. What makes him different from the prophets in the Old Testament who raised the dead is Jesus was saying he was doing it himself. It was by his authority that it happened. He has claims here to be the Messianic King, so much more than just a prophet. He has authority to raise any dead he wants to. And then in verse 27, we have another story. And Jesus passed on from there. Two blind men followed him, crying aloud, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." When he entered the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus said to them, "Do you believe that I'm able to do this?" They said to him, "Yes, Lord." Then he touched their eyes, saying, "According to your faith, be it done to you." And their eyes were opened, and Jesus sternly warned them, "See to it." I don't know if that's supposed to be in there. "See to it. See to it that no one knows about it." But they went away and spread his fame through all that district. There's a couple of interesting little facts in here. Jesus is warning them not to tell anybody. I mean, he just raised the girl from the dead. What's a few eyes, you know? There's another thing in this story that's really significant. These people are following Jesus, wanting to be healed. And what are they calling out to him? They're using a title for him, aren't they? Son of David. I mean, it's a messianic title. But that's not the point. The point is, when does Jesus heal these men? He waits till they go inside the house to do it. This is very unusual because we see in our minds from these stories, Jesus is healing in the streets. He's healing in the streets. He's doing all this stuff publicly. But what we see happening in these stories is Jesus goes in to raise the girl, and what does he do? Sends everybody out. Jesus is going to heal these blind men. They're following him down the street in crowds. He goes into the house, bring on those blind guys. Heals them in private. Warns them and sends them out. Why? What's remarkable about this story is that Jesus spoke of the faith of the men as part of their healing. It's unusual. It's the exception and not the rule. The amount of faith did not limit the amount of healing. It wasn't like one guy had a lot of faith, so he saw again, and the other guy had a little bit of faith, so he could only see in one eye. You know, we get these ideas of what kind of faith is involved in our healing. Jesus won't heal me because I have such a little amount of faith. Hey, it's not the way it works, because it's not your power that's doing the healing. All right? So it wasn't the amount of faith. It's the fact that they had faith. The healing came to these men because they had faith that Jesus had authority as the Messiah to heal them. They believed something about him, that there were prophecies that the servant of the Lord, the son of David, would come and would actually heal people. So it's more important to look at the title Son of David here. What's important to understand is Jesus didn't tell them not to use that title. He didn't say, don't call me that. That's for somebody else. He recognized that they knew who he was. In Isaiah 35, 5 and 6, this is the expression in a merciful Messiah who would come and heal them. The blind, in particular, would be connecting the promise of the Messiah's healing to Jesus. Imagine being a blind person. Nobody can heal you. You're blind. And you go to the synagogue and they're talking about the Messiah there and they read verses from Isaiah that say, when the Messiah comes, the blind will be able to see. Can you imagine that? Wouldn't that just excite you? Saying, boy, I hope he comes soon because I'm really tired of being blind. And then they hear the Son of David is here. There's this guy out there. He's the Messiah. He's healing people. Their faith grew out of a belief that the Messiah was the one who could do the healing, that he was the one coming to heal them, that it was prophesied that blind people like them would see because of Jesus. They knew he could heal, but they say, have mercy on us. Would he have mercy on them? They had faith in Jesus and his authority. Not just an authority and faith in God, but in Jesus as the Messiah. So I think Jesus waited until they come into the house to limit how many people would see the miracle. Because it was clearly tied to him being the Messiah. And it was one thing to be a faith healer healing people, and it was another thing to have a false fervor over who the Son of David was. So Jesus tells these guys to keep quiet. And that supports the idea of why he waited to go into the house to heal them. But did they obey Jesus? I imagine they left the house. Like they just kicked the door open. Whoa, you'll never believe. You know, I don't think they held it in for very long. But here, what we need to see is that Jesus wanted people to have faith in the right kind of Messiah. Not just one who would do healings. Just as in John, he doesn't want people who just are after the food. You know, there's a lot of people who want Jesus to heal them, but only physically. Thank you very much. They don't really want to know him and be like him. Jesus wants the right kind of followers. So even though these people who were healed by him, they had faith in him, they still weren't listening to him. And then there's one more story here. As they were going away, behold, a demon-oppressed man who was mute was brought to him. And when the demon had been cast out, the mute man spoke. And the crowds marveled, saying, never was anything like this seen in Israel. But the Pharisees said, he casts out demons by the prince of demons. The story is simple, and you know there's more text that goes along with it somewhere else. But what's remarkable about this story is that Jesus has power to heal the demonically induced illness. That's what's important here. Oh yeah, the blindness, the other thing, these are all natural things that happened. This was an unnatural one. What's interesting here is that, you know, sometimes in the Bible you read it's about a demon, and sometimes you read that it's just a sickness. What does that tell you? That tells you the people living in the day were able to discern the difference between the two kinds. They knew the difference. And so sometimes they said it was that, and sometimes they said it was the other. By putting the detail in here, it implies their ability to distinguish between natural and unnatural causes for things. So not all deafness and not all muteness has a demonic cause, but this one did. And Jesus shows his power over that as well. Now, in all of these stories, something bigger than each one of them is at play. And like I said, Matthew's taken them all, condensed them down, and stuffed them all in one place. And that's what I'm going to do this morning. I'm not going to try to expand them any more than that. Jesus had authority to heal those who had faith in him, even if he was not an active part of that healing in the case of the woman. Jesus had authority over physical life and death, something that other faith healers could not pull off. But most importantly, Jesus is the one pointed to by the prophet Isaiah. That is the crucial element. The Messiah was prophesied to come and do these things, and Jesus comes and does them. And that is the most important thing. He is the Messiah who's bringing God's kingdom, right? Never lose fact that the idea of Messiah has to do with being the anointed king of God over God's kingdom. That's why it's an important word. Jesus is this anointed Messiah, this anointed one of God's kingdom. So this layup is important for what comes in the next two chapters. Especially when we get to chapter 11, Jesus will refer this. Jesus is authenticated by God as the servant of the Lord, the one written about by Isaiah. Yet interaction with him still requires faith. It wasn't like the Messiah came and he just did his thing, whether you liked it or not. In order to enter into this kingdom, and in order to truly see the one Messiah, the one Isaiah prophesied about, you had to have eyes to see and ears to hear. Otherwise, you were still under the judgment of God. You still had to have faith to believe that God would work in your life, or he didn't work in your life. Very, very important to understand. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for the beauty of physical healing, that sometimes that's offered to us in this life, and sometimes it's something we will just have to wait until after this life. But in either case, whether we're raised from the dead or raised from an illness in this life, we know that we're in your kingdom and we have faith in you, the one who has taken away the biggest problem we have, and that is sin and judgment. You brought us into the kingdom of the Son of your love, and you've restored us to relationship with yourself. For that we are forever grateful.